Good evening.
Good evening.
As we hear the last strains of the jazz.
Yes, beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, great. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Welcome, Sherry Huber.
Thank you, sir.
We're back in town.
We are. We're back in town.
It's great to be here.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
Have I said lately what wonderful weather California has?
Yeah, they turned up the heat a little bit.
Yeah, they did. They turned up the heat. I loved every place I was on this latest trip, and the trip was not long on sunshine. So
I, for one,
am not going to complain if it's just a little too nice here.
Yes, yes. It's great to be back, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And you had fun on your trip?
Very much, very much. There are great people out there.
Wonderful.
And I got to see a lot of them.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you tuning in for the first time, Sherry's a Zen teacher and student. Been a teacher and student for many years. And you were just on the East Coast for a few weeks talking about a new book.
Yes. When You're Falling, Dive.
When You're Falling, Dive.
Acceptance, Freedom, and Possibility.
Acceptance, Freedom, and Possibility. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And people can learn all about this at your website, sherryhuber.com.
Mm-hmm.
Great. We have a caller on the air from Santa Cruz. I'd like to welcome Kaya from Santa Cruz. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Kaya, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Kaya.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Great.
Santa Cruz is a long ways away. We can hardly get you
here. That's right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. So I have a question or would like some guidance from Sherry. I'm looking at a process, and shall I just go into it? I didn't know if we were talking about a specific theme today
Waking up and ending suffering.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this process in my life that's been coming up a lot over the past few weeks. And basically, something happened about 6 weeks ago that the content is irrelevant. But basically, the message is that keeps coming up repetitively is that I should have known better.
Mm.
And another message that comes up is if I were smarter or somehow better, that this wouldn't have happened. This wouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so what occurs then is that I just keep making myself wrong over this issue, and it's incessant, and it... So that's basically it.
Okay, may I ask you about... So is what you're saying that this particular kind of thing has happened in your life before?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going along, and you think everything is one way,
mm-hmm.
and then it becomes clear that it's not the way you thought it was,
mm-hmm.
and you get information from the outside that you should have known better? You could have seen this coming?
Well, yes, exactly. Exactly. And usually what happens is I go along in life trying to do the right thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to be good,
mm-hmm.
Like really dotting my I's, crossing my T's, like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Really careful.
I'm really going to be mindful. And also I guess I could throw in a little bit of content. Basically, it was something that happened with a landlord. And I felt like I was very complete on how I left the space and was very conscious about it and wanted to leave it in an honorable way. So all this good stuff, right? I want to be good. I want to do the right thing. And I'm thinking I'm in alignment with, you know, the landlord. And it's really important to me that they like me, that they like the space. And then I get this message later on that it's not okay. And it's, in fact, an extreme message, and I'm left with two feelings, and one is, like, I failed, and then another message, which is within me, that's, like, I hate her. Like, I'm angry. I'm mad.
Right.
And I'm caught.
Yeah. So so you get this message that is completely out of sync with your experience of life,
mm-hmm.
and the... What you make that mean is if you try hard enough, you can control other people.
Yeah. It's really believable in this context. And yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, saying it out loud, I'm like, of course not. I know when there are instances when that's not so, and I've been able to sort of chasse around it. But this time, it's like, God, it's daggers in me. It's fascinating. Like,
main piece of it now is the main piece of it sort of the, however I would call it, devastation of being so kind of out of control or off base or however you want to talk about it. Is that the most difficult part, or is it the anger that you feel, the rage that you feel toward this person when they don't respond the way you think they're going to respond?
You know, it oscillates. It totally depends on who I'm being in the moment.
Yeah.
One moment
it's you. The next one it's her.
It's next moment I can't believe what she did.
Yeah. And so I'm wrong. No, she's wrong. No, I'm wrong. No, she's wrong.
She's wrong.
Yeah. I hate me. I hate her. I hate me. I hate her.
And then I think the next layer of frustration is I see this process. It's familiar. I've been using lots of tools. I've been meditating. I've been, you know, doing mapping and whatnot. And it's still there. And I think no matter how much, if you want to say, consensus reality I get, you know, from other people, from friends and whatnot, it's, you know.
Okay, so friends would say, you know, she was a nutcase all along. How were you deluded enough to think you were going to make a difference in this person's life?
Yeah.
Is that the kind of thing they tell you?
For the most part. And yes, mm-hmm. I stopped talking to people because it's, of course, they're going to be on my side.
Right. And and so that's a piece of it, isn't it? That mm-hmm. What you're getting kind of from everybody, they are on your side in a way, but they're also kind of telling you that how you are in life is deluded.
I shouldn't trust. I think that's another big, okay.
Yeah.
Check that out. I shouldn't have trusted this woman. I'm too naive. I'm too open. I try too hard.
Right. So there's something wrong with you mm-hmm. that this didn't go the way you wanted, which to me is a really interesting piece of it for all of us to look at. Mm-hmm. Am I doing what I want to do? Am I doing the thing that feels to me like I'm operating from integrity? Mm-hmm. Or am I doing what I'm doing to get something? Because if I'm doing what I'm doing because it's what I want to do, this is the way I want to live my life, this is who I want to be in the world, then it doesn't actually matter what anybody else is doing. But if I'm being the way I am because I'm going to get something in exchange, and, you know, actually, I don't want to be that way. Mm-hmm. I don't want to care how other people feel or what happens to them. You know, I just want to go about living my life and doing what I want to do and taking advantage of people whenever I can. But, you know, I don't do that. And then I try to act from an honorable place, which it really isn't, but it's going to get me what I want. And then it doesn't. And I'm ready to kill somebody. Does that sound like it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So all of those things feel important to me, to the way we are allowed to do something. So you know this process, and you get the same result regularly, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And yet, when you go into a situation, you listen to the same voices telling you to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then, after you've done the same thing, and you got the result that probably you, if you'd thought about it, would have known you were going to get, then you get beaten up for doing what the voices talked you into doing in the first place. That's kind of slimy, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. And then after that, we reach the next stage of it, which is they won't shut up and leave you alone.
Yeah.
So you wake up into the voices. They start talking to you all day long. You get yourself all worked up into a state over it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of sucking all your life force out of you. Mm-hmm. You could have your energy to do more interesting or
oh yes
constructive things in life, but instead you've got to review and replay this miserable situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now, granted, they are getting, they're getting quieter.
Right.
But they're definitely still there. And what I'm watching now is how I'm really careful.
Yeah.
I'm really, like, I think there is a certain amount of energy that is now invested in, I got to be so careful.
That's right. Now I've got to find a new way to control. That way of controlling life didn't actually work. So now I'm going to find a new way. I'll control myself even more.
Yes.
And then I'll get the result that I want. You know, it's like the Great Depression. Isn't that a good, the Great Depression? people lost everything in that. And they came out of it convinced that they have to be more careful about money. Now, I think they could have come out of it getting it, that you might as well enjoy life because there are no guarantees. Hmm. You with me?
Yeah.
So instead of, I need to be more careful, it might be interesting to approach it as, I need to really get it, that I can't control life. That all I can do is pay attention, do the best I can do, and work with whatever I get.
You know what this is bringing up for me is another belief about superstition,
mm-hmm.
that no matter what, this is going to happen to me.
Exactly. But, and you know what we call that in Buddhism? Karma.
The hungry ghost.
Well, it feeds the hungry ghosts, absolutely, which you can attest to, right? Because they've been feasting off of you for days now. Mm-hmm. But it's karma. So I have a belief that this kind of thing is always going to happen to me, and guess what? It does.
It does.
Now, it doesn't happen to people who don't have that belief.
Exactly. Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah, a friend of mine moved at the very same time I did and had a completely, completely different experience.
Yeah.
And he's never had issues like I've had, and so that's kind of fed into that superstition. And it's karma.
Yes.
Exactly what it is.
Yeah. And so it's not true that this always happens to you. It's true that you are set up to see it this way.
Yes.
Yeah. So, again, to question whether or not you can be attentive enough, aware enough, cautious and careful and looking over your own shoulder enough to control life, or if you'd rather put your energy into being present with whatever is, and using whatever arises as your best opportunity to let go of anything you're holding on to, and get it that all we have is a chance to be here.
Yeah.
We're not going to get to control anything. The only way we can predict outcomes is if we make things happen. And by that I mean, if I have a belief that everybody in my life is going to leave me, I can get rid of them if I try hard enough.
Yes.
And then I'll get to be right. You see, I told you everybody would leave me. They always have. And if you've ever been around somebody like that, it's very difficult to encourage them to see that they are doing it. It's not something that's happening to us.
And the piece for me is not to make myself wrong.
Exactly.
Because then that just feeds into it again.
It just feeds into the whole thing. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it. It's karma.
And so just to be, once again,
just
as always, be present, just notice.
That's right. And of course, for me, you know, the waking up and ending suffering part of the program is all contained in your relationship with yourself. If this had happened and your response to it would have been, "Aw, poor thing, you worked so hard, you tried so hard. You know, we need to go out and have a nice dinner and celebrate the fact that that situation is over and we get to move on
in our
lives."
I know, that was poopy.
Yeah, that was really rotten. We need to go for a long walk out in a beautiful place to let that one go.
Yeah.
Instead of, see, you did something wrong, you have to be punished, you need to be controlled more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, your work is cut out for you.
Yes, it is. Thank you. Gosh, so, Sherry.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling us, Kaya. You're listening to KZSU Stanford at 90.1 FM. Open air with Sherry Huber. That was a fascinating call.
Mm-hmm.
Some good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can all see ourselves in that.
Yes.
You know, I just have to be careful enough and figure it out. And then only things that I want will happen to me. And if something happens that I don't want to have happen, it must be my fault and proof that there's something wrong with me.
Uh-huh.
And no, it just means life happens. And we have a chance to either be kind to ourselves and through that and sympathetic and compassionate and in suffering, or we can go with the conditioned program and beat ourselves up and suffer.
Yes, because the conditioned program, as you're talking about, our world gets smaller and smaller, and pretty soon we're not getting out of bed. And
just as Kaya described, okay, well, I have to, you know, I have to be even more careful than I was before, and pretty soon can't do anything, because anything you do is probably going to be a mistake.
Yes.
Especially if there's a voice inside of us who's going to make everything we do into a mistake, then for sure that's the way it's going to go, as long as we're listening to that voice.
Yes. As long as we're willing to see stuff as a mistake,
we're
going to be making mistakes.
We're going to have mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And Kaya started off her conversation talking about process versus content.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say more about what that difference is and why it's so important?
Well, yeah. I think her situation is so perfect, because here's this, living in this place, moving out, trying to do everything right. And she kind of indicated that there had been a string of those before, with probably different, you know, trying to do a job perfectly, trying to be the right person in a relationship, trying to be the perfect student, trying to, you know, whatever the circumstances of our lives. So the content of it, what's going on, is different, but how it's being done is exactly the same, which is how we wind up in the same place over and over and over.
Uh-huh.
So I'm trying to be the perfect person so that I won't make a mistake, so that I won't get beaten up.
Right.
And I'm doing that. You know, I'm doing that with the clerk in the store. I'm trying to be the perfect customer so that I will be perceived in a certain way, so that I don't get a beating afterwards. Again, in relationships, in jobs, in wherever I am, every life situation is another little vignette in which I get to act out this same process.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, and that really fools us, because we think, well, this is different. You know, this is a different relationship. This is a different situation. Mm. You know, this is work, and that was an apartment. You know, what do those have to do with each other? Well, everything, because I'm doing the same thing. I'm feeling the same things. I'm thinking the same things. I'm saying the same things. I'm making the same choices. The process is exactly the same.
So whatever experience we approach in our lives becomes a mirror, a chance to see how we do it.
Especially when we start catching on to process.
Right.
So that kind of, the kind of situation, people are always saying something and I'm feeling rejected.
Hmm.
Okay. So, you know, for the first X number of years, as people say something, I feel rejected. That's just the way it is. There's something really wrong with me. People don't like me.
Right.
And then I begin to get it that, no, I'm constantly in a situation that I'm perceiving that way.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know that that person was rejecting me.
Mm.
I don't know that. I don't know that they said that and meant the same thing as what I made it mean.
Uh-huh.
So when I catch on to that, you know, every person I meet is a potential rejector for me. and sooner or later, I'm going to work things around into that position and get my feelings hurt and feel rejected. Now, I mean, that's a completely different relationship with that issue. Now I'm looking for it. Now I'm meeting people and getting involved with them just to watch how that whole system gets set up, gets put in place. Pretty soon I see through it. I don't need to do that any longer, and I'm off to the next the next thing that karma is setting up for
me. Yeah. So it seems to me that the same way we could see everyone as somebody who rejects me, we could see everyone as our friend.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Or somebody who doesn't know I'm alive, which is probably closer to the truth. Somebody who's so involved as I am in their own little world.
Me.
That they're not thinking about me. They have no interest in rejecting me. I'm not worth that kind of energy. Oh my goodness, that sounds jaded, doesn't it?
Yes.
And probably fairly true. Just in the if we look at our own lives and just extrapolate, You know, how much time do we spend worrying about what other people are doing except in relationship to ourselves? Very darn much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name's Michael Gray. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back here in just a couple minutes. So if you want to give us a call, you can reach us at 650-723-9010. We also love to get messages over email, so please send us any questions you have. You can send them to openair@kzsu.org. And we're back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name is Michael Gray. You can pick us up in the Bay Area at 90.1 FM. You can also catch us on the internet as well at kzsulive.stanford.edu. We have another caller on the line. I'd like to welcome Beth from Pittsburgh. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I basically called in so I could hear the show.
I see.
But I'm always pleased to be able to talk.
Oh, good. Good.
Sometimes my internet connection doesn't quite come through. I've been looking at how I have a companion that goes along with me that is always telling me that there's something wrong.
Yes. We call that something wrong mind.
He does not shut up at all.
Yes.
He's constantly going.
Yes.
There's something wrong every minute.
Yes. The combination that I find interesting is not enough and something wrong. They're a complete program for suffering.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a new thought that's coming up,
mm-hmm.
and that's if I start not believing this voice, then how will I know if something's really wrong?
There, you can know that there is never anything wrong. That makes it easier.
That there's a lot of fear with that.
That's right. And the same little disembodied friend who's always finding something wrong is the vehicle for fear.
Right. And that's what you were talking about with the last caller, kind of the same thing.
Yes. Yes. It's a process in Buddhism, in Zen, the way we look at that, it's a process to create an illusion of a constant you that is separate from life. And the way that
sense of reality is just an illusion.
That is correct. And so it's maintained through there's something wrong. So there's a constant scanning. There's not enough. There's something wrong. There's not enough. There's something wrong. And that puts that little illusion of a separate self at the center of the universe. And if there's any possibility of being removed from that center of the universe position, the reaction is a great deal of fear. And so we're meant, when we feel that fear, to say, oh, you're right. I'll listen to you because there really is something wrong. So the key to this, the secret to the whole thing, is that we have to prove to ourselves that there is no truth to that. And the quickest way to prove that to ourselves is to see through the illusion of fear. So fear, as you know, my take on that, sensations in the body accompanied by a story.
Hmm.
So the heart is pounding, the stomach is in a knot, the palms are sweaty, knees are shaky, and there's a story that there is something terribly wrong, something awful is going to happen. So when you prove to yourself that those are just sensations in the body, and that if you turn all of your attention onto them, onto the sensations, not onto maintaining the story that is escalating the sensations, mm-hmm. because, you know, when you were a kid, did you ever sit around with a group and tell ghost stories?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could get five or six kids, you just scare yourselves to death.
Yeah, and get adults, a real kick out of it.
Adults do the same thing. They just don't realize they're getting a kick out of it.
Yeah, particularly like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Absolutely. So turning all of the attention to the sensations, not maintaining the story, the sensations pass away. So then everything calms down, and guess what happens? The story starts up again, and the sensations get activated and you scare yourself to death. So proving to yourself that that's the sequence, watching how that happens, you begin to see that if you stay focused on the sensations in the body, you don't go into those frightening places. Staying focused on the sensations in the body, it's impossible to have something wrong. Okay?
Which is the other side of it.
That has to be maintained. Something wrong is a story. Fear is a story. Not enough is a story. And
which
when
is something that I'm creating.
That's right. Well, something that illusion of separation creates.
Yeah. I don't get to get credit for that either.
No. I is an illusion, remember? So,
I keep coming back to that one. That one's tough.
Yeah, we don't need to blame it or praise it. It's just an illusion.
It just is.
Yeah.
Which is the other side of it is the acceptance. And I've been reading in your book, When You're Falling, Dive, about, you know, the process of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself at a couple points saying, you know, just kind of like confused about how to accept.
Yeah, well, that's because...
But that's a sign that I'm in conditioning, right?
That's because we go up into our conditioned mind, and we try to figure something out. And that always
can't accept.
That's right. That always results in confusion. So the way to accept it is just to notice the story, drop it, come back to the breath, the sensations in the body. Another story starts, and we drop it, come back to the sensations and to the breath. And pretty soon, there's nothing going on, and it's really easy to accept.
Okay. So if I drop everything, like with the sense of there's something wrong, like I can come, like I've been looking at the things that I really think are wrong.
Yeah, but why?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's like sitting around and thinking of all of the diseases that could kill you.
Well, no, it's like as I've gone through the day and I see something wrong, it's like, oh, you know, like there's this person that I just don't get along with. There's something wrong with them. I've just been noticing when I'm interacting with them that I think there's something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, just for the record, there is nobody who actually thinks there's something wrong. It's just a story. It's just a way of maintaining the story. If you watch the nightly news, nobody actually believes that we're going anywhere with this. It's just a way to keep everything worked up. Okay? No, the nightly news isn't going to fix anything or change anything. There's no improvement. We're not going anywhere. It's just a way of keeping a shared reality afloat. So if you recognize that, you can watch that tendency and you can ask yourself, and what would my life be like if I weren't living in this story? If I weren't living in this fairy tale, what would my life be like? Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Beth. So we have all these sensations in our body that we hardly notice, mm-hmm. and we go straight to thought, emotion, story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can step back, reel everything back to what's going on in our body.
Oh, absolutely. And we can watch that process that Beth was describing with her, was it person at work or, you know, that getting into the story and then how the story just takes on a life of its own.
Right.
And now I really believe that it's true. Well, why do I believe that it's true? Well, because it's being told to me over and over and over. So, you know, again, we can watch that with the media. Something is said on the news, and then it's said over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And after a while, there might be something that comes out that says, oh, well, that, you know, that actually we found out that wasn't true, but it doesn't matter because everybody believes it by then.
Yes.
So that mirrors perfectly the process that goes on inside us. Why do I think there's something wrong with this person? Well, because a voice inside my head is telling me there's something wrong with this person. Now, I always like to take that back to projection because, in fact, there is something wrong with that voice that's talking to me. Okay? It sees something wrong everywhere.
Yes.
But the fact that it's projecting it out onto other people doesn't mean anything other than that's the story.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, Friday the 13th, part 26. Yeah. We go through the same thing. Okay, now here's the story starts, and then you think, oh, well, no, this is just a movie. It's not going to scare me because I know it's, you know, we've seen this, we've done this. We know exactly how it goes. It's a formula. And then you're just screaming and gripping the seat. And, yeah.
Yes.
Cause we just fall right into that
familiar
story. We just get caught up and buy it and believe it and get worked up and
off to the races.
Suffering races.
Great. Let's end some more suffering, shall we?
Let's give it our best shot.
We have another caller here. I'd like to welcome Judith from Dayton, Ohio. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have been looking at projection.
Oh.
And
good timing.
Sometimes it's hard for me to get, and I think I got a little piece, but it's like I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think, and I'm going to give you this, and I know it's content. I have a friend, and I feel like they are putting up boundaries and walls so much that they're not really present in our friendship.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I know that's projection.
Yeah, that's right.
It may or may not be true about this person.
That is exactly right. The fact that we're projecting doesn't mean it's untrue.
Right. That's, mm-hmm. that's a new one. I just got that.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece is I wasn't able to see my projection because I don't think I feel that way about this person. But I turned a little and looked at my daughter's situation and my interaction with her, and I think that's what I do with her.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So
you would recognize something that looks similar in
right.
another relationship and
right.
tend to give it the same name.
Exactly.
Oh, that's very subtle, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's like I wasn't seeing it with projection because I couldn't connect with how I was projecting about this friend.
Uh-huh. Because as far as you can tell, mm-hmm. you really don't feel that way about this friend.
I don't feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But And you know, like I said, the new part was that it may or may not be true about that person. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my perception.
That's right. So
but then,
that's
then,
right.
Yeah, you know, it was keeping me from seeing the projection totally.
Yeah.
Until I thought, okay, you know, I'm really looking at this. It's like I really want to see how this is projection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how might I be doing this with someone else?
Yeah.
And
very good.
And then it came to me, and I thought, you know, it's like, is this right, or am I just totally missing it again?
No, I would say you're right on target.
Okay.
So what we look at is, okay, if I were acting this way, I would be coming from X place, mm-hmm. right? I would be setting up boundaries and all of these things to try to keep a distance. That's what I would be doing if I were saying and doing the things that this other person is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, okay, I wouldn't do that. I don't want to do that with this person. In fact, perhaps quite the opposite. But how do I know that that's what they're doing? Why do I think that that's what this other person is doing? So I look around in my life and say, oh, well, because that's what I do in other relationships.
Yeah, and I really want to be present with my daughter.
Uh-huh.
So it's a really good thing that I saw this.
Exactly. Exactly. And that is such an argument for that attitude of mind.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw this and you let those voices start beating you up. What kind of a mother are you? How could you be this way? Oh, my God. How long has this been going on? You've probably traumatized this child for eternity. You know, then you miss the awareness.
Mm-hmm.
The next time you're with your daughter, it's nowhere in your conscious awareness because you've repressed it, because all it does is make you feel bad and prove that you're a rotten mother.
Right.
But instead, you didn't go down that little path of suffering.
Not this time.
And that's right. And you stayed present with it, and you could get to, this is very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Excellent. Excellent. You're a role model for all of us.
Thank you. Got so.
Thank you. Good night.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Judy. Wow, projection again.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's good. And that approach to it is so helpful. You know, with anything that I want to know, I'm having some sort of a reaction to something. Something's going on, and I think, you know, what is this? What is this? And I break it down just the way she did. You know, I think that this is what's going on. This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm believing. okay, where do I do that in my life?
Uh-huh.
It's like that little exercise that we do where, you know, if you want to know what's going on with you and another person, you can just write down three words or phrases that you would use to describe that person.
Uh-huh.
And then own those three words or phrases.
Yes.
Okay, so mean-spirited, selfish, and generally ugly. Okay, so, all right, well, there, that's clear. Now, how does that show up in my life? How am I that way? And I won't have to look very far if I'm not going to get beaten up for seeing what I'm doing.
Mm.
You know, if I want to have the awareness because this is going to be helpful, this is going to assist me in ending my suffering and in bringing less suffering to other lives. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to see how this works. Oh, okay. So the bad news about that is, I see it there.
Ouch.
Oh, and there, I see it there too. And pretty soon, you know, do I do anything else in relationship besides that? And of course I do. But it's there for us to see because it's, as they say, what's up for us.
Yes.
So this is the next layer for me to see, and I'm going to see it everywhere in life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I look at a person or a situation, and what I see is mean-spirited, selfish, and ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I want to end my suffering, I'm going to choose to see, how do I do that in my life?
That's right.
How am I mean-spirited, selfish, and ugly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
now, am I really being that way? Probably not. But neither is the other person.
Hmm.
You see, that's the beauty of it. I'm not actually that way.
It's not personal.
That's right. It may look that way, but I'm actually intimidated when I'm around this other person. Or I'm feeling bad in some way. And so I act out in all these bizarre junior high behaviors that have nothing to do with what's actually going on. I think, oh my gosh, but from that other person's point of view, I could see where they would think that I was really a mean, miserable human being.
I see.
Well, gosh, maybe other people that I see and decide they're being this or that or something else, maybe there's something else going on with them as well.
Wow.
So it can be hugely illuminating, enlightening even.
Enlightening.
Yes.
Which is what we want, of course. If we were to want something.
If we had a goal, that would be it. Yes. Waking up and ending suffering.
Yes. And I was thinking, as you mentioned, it seems the key to this is that no beatings, no punishment for
absolutely.
Looking. Because if we go in and we're going to get beat up for looking how we're mean-spirited, selfish, and ugly, then it's no fun.
No. No, and I don't want to.
I want to. It's painful.
Yeah, I want to pretend like the thing doesn't exist. I want to remain in ignorance. Many, many people live in a place of being afraid of themselves. You know, I don't want to see anything about me because I'm going to get a beating because it's going to be proof that I'm a bad person.
Yes.
And it's the thing that I always encourage people to consider is that awareness practice or spiritual practice or this waking up process doesn't begin until that beating stuff stops.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
the beatings are just a holdover from childhood conditioning. I'm a bad girl. I have to be punished. You're a bad boy. And so you need to feel bad and guilty about yourself and things need to be taken away from you. And you need to you need to know that you're a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
When we put that behind us, then we can start actually being present to life as it is. And we can move very quickly away from suffering.
Yeah, when there's no fear of
absolutely.
Of looking.
When we begin to get it that life is our best opportunity to be fully awake, alive, plugged in, tuned in, that it's infinite possibility, and it's a heck of a good time.
Yeah, and I was going to say, don't forget the fun.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. But we have to get past that. Mom, dad are watching me, and if I do something that I'm not supposed to do, I'm bad, and I'm going to be punished. Mm-hmm. We have to. There's nothing wrong with you. There are about three or four pages where we write in increasingly larger letters. Almost nobody wants to grow up.
Yes,
and that's the thing. We we tend to want to stay small children, being watched, being punished, so that we feel like our surroundings are familiar and there's a safety in that, even though it's painful.
Mm-hmm.
We feel secure. We feel anxious when we start going out into the world as grown-ups. But in the same way we talked about coming back to the sensations in the body, anxiety could just as easily be excitement, thrill, anticipation,
exactly.
Great fun ahead.
Yes.
And so moving into that grown-up place of, no, I'm not going to put all of my energy into an illusion of control in order to be safe. I'm going to stop assuming life is unsafe and that I am unequal to life. Now, let's go out there and let the games begin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have a good time.
Have a good time, exactly.
And that's one of your books, There Is Nothing Wrong With You.
Yes.
Which you were quoting there.
Regardless of what you were taught to believe.
Not irregardless.
That's right. Not dis-irregardless.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There is nothing wrong with you. And that, of course, encourages us to find that for ourselves, to prove that to ourselves, that at the deepest level, life is not about wrong. There's a great Rumi poem, you know, that
R-U-M-I, Rumi, yes.
Out beyond the field. Right and wrong, there's a field, something like that. There's a field out beyond right and wrong, I'll meet you there.
Yes.
Which is what he's pointing at. We
yes.
have to get beyond. Now, this is not going to take us into a discussion that what we're suggesting is a completely immoral or amoral approach to life. Not at all. But that dualistic breaking life down into good and bad and right and wrong and who is and who isn't and reward and punishment. We have to grow beyond that, grow up and leave those childish concerns behind in order for us to really consider freedom.
Yes. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name's Michael Gray. If you'd like to join us today, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010 or get on your computer and type us a message at openair@kzsu.org. We have some email questions here.
Very good.
All right. Dear Sherry, I'm looking at how, quote, I see the problems of the world and community and switch between feeling hopeless and feeling a righteous anger, like the kind of anger I project onto the prophets of the Hebrew Scriptures. Part of me wants to make things better, and this part works really hard to get involved in politics, etc. Then a part of me sees how the big money runs everything anyway, and then feels overwhelmed and hopeless. Then I sink into inertia. I'm beginning to see that, quote, make things better, and, quote, things will never change, as two sides of the same duality. But there must be a way to really work to bring about change without swinging back and forth. When I ask myself, what do I get out of the, quote, swinging back and forth, the answer seems to be that I get to feel vital, important, and then feel useless and irrelevant. That's the pattern of conditioning, I know. But I'm having a hard time imagining having the energy to do the work I do without righteous indignation, outraged at being ignored, or anger at injustices that I see around me. I'm beginning to glimpse what a bore I must be to my family and friends.
There's a motivation, huh, to get on with it.
I'm also working with my third chakra energy, practicing acting on my own will rather than being acted upon, and wonder how that might fit into this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Please comment.
Well, that's just huge, isn't it? That if we're not driven by that righteous anger, we just won't do anything. So those two choices are, I'm all wound up about everything that's wrong, and then I'm devastated when it seems like I'm the only one who cares. So this kind of full circle back to our first caller, that idea that of living from the place that is true for us. So the things that I'm doing are not because there's something wrong in the world, wrong with other people, wrong with me, things that have to be fixed, changed to meet my standards of how life should be. I just look at what moves my heart. I look at how I want to be in the world, the what I perceive as my piece of it, my contribution, and then I act from there. which is very difficult because we don't have that huge anger energy. There's something wrong with them, and they're going to get theirs. Pushing us, we don't have the reaction from that swing over into poor me. I'm the only one who really understands, and nobody cares. So what it does effectively is get that I out of the center of everything, and then we have a chance really to be helpful in the situation. It's going into a situation, and instead of here's what we need to do, walking in and saying what needs to be done.
Uh-huh.
How can I help? What contribution can I make?
Uh-huh.
And again, it takes me out of the center of everything. And that's the piece that's so challenging. You know, there's how can I be of service? Doesn't get a lot of adrenaline going, generally speaking. we need you to move those chairs into the other. Well,
I want to do something important.
I really want to make a difference. Yeah, so I think it's great. I'm getting a sense of what a bore I am to my family because we can see ourselves in that. We are just incredibly tedious and tiresome when we're trying to get other people to see how important we are.
Yes.
It's wonderful that the writer is catching on to that.
Yes.
And then finding, I predict a huge source of energy that is from authenticity.
Yes.
Plenty of energy to do whatever is there to be done.
Yes.
And it doesn't glorify the ego.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so instead of swinging from one side to the other side, we start to see both sides.
Yes, and we get to rest right here in the middle.
Rest here in the middle.
And use the energy that is here in the middle to do whatever it is that we choose to participate in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, we have another caller. I'd like to welcome Norma from Stanford. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi there.
Good evening.
Hi. So my question involves a guy that I recently met, and after a lot of conversations with him, I found out that he's a drug addict and into a lot of dark stuff. And he keeps trying to come into my life, and part of me doesn't know whether or not to just leave because he's he's not going to be a good part of good involvement.
This is not going to you suspect that this is not going to lead to anything that you might call a happy ending.
Yeah, but part of it is also very familiar because my dad's a drug addict, and I know how to. And I feel for him. I guess that's the part of me that wants to.
Of course you do.
So.
And it's, I'm sure you see how far ahead of the game you are by just that realization.
And at the same time, how behind it.
Exactly. Yes, how pulled you are. Everything in you responds with a yes. Because that response was there before you were able to think and speak.
Sure.
Yeah, energetically, love is this. Caring is this. This is the form it takes. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so you know at the deepest level how to react to that. Yeah. And yet you also know that it is not in your best interest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how any involvement could continue that wouldn't be detrimental to either of us. But
yeah. But I think you know that answer, don't you?
How? I don't want to, but
I know you don't.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I know you don't. Because it's hard, because it feels like rejecting that part of yourself, rejecting your dad, rejecting a great deal that has been very significant in your life. You know, one of the models that I use with people is what we call subpersonalities or aspects of the personality.
Okay.
So you have, let's say, at any given time, 15 or 20 different personalities that you're going in and out of. So, you know, one minute you feel this way, and then you're this person who's concerned about this, and then you're over there. Can you picture that in your life?
Sure.
Yeah. And so people will say, well, you know, I have this one part of me who's really destructive. And I'll say, okay, well, here's the deal. You can bring that destructive part of you into center, if I use that word. Is that?
Sure.
Okay. You can ask it to come into center with you and interact with you. And you'll talk to it and help it and whatever. But you're not going to go out into its realm with it. You're not going to leave center to go out there and roam around and talk to it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Sure, it does.
Yeah. And so in that same way, we can be with people in our lives who are perhaps, let's see, the tendency would be for you to lose more than you gained in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so to set it up so that the parameters are so strict that you are actually protected and he is protected. So that neither one of you can go unconscious in a way that will be harmful to you.
So in terms of proceeding...
Well,
you'd recommend to...
Yeah, well, you know what the dangers are.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have huge parts of you that are comfortable with and familiar with what I would call unconsciousness. Okay, because you learned that in your family at a very, very early age, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be up to you and how much you want to risk. And the thing that I hope that my wish, if I had a wish for you, is that in terms that we were talking about earlier, whatever you decide to do, you don't get beaten up later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, none of that. You should have known better. Okay? Because again, the same voices that are talking you into this are going to want to beat you up later if it goes the way part of you suspects it's going to go. You with me?
Sure.
Yeah. So if I'm going to go out, I go out shopping, you know, and I only have $150 to my name, and I see something in a store, and I just think I can't live without it, and I go buy that. I have to think before I do that. Now, when this mood passes, when I no longer want that thing, when it's mine and I've lost interest in it, how am I going to feel about it?
Yeah.
Am I going to hear, you should have known better, you shouldn't have done that? Or am I going to get, hey, this is now, that was then, and when it was going on, this is the conscious a choice as I could make.
Okay.
And I always find it helpful to write these things down. You know? So here I am. It's this date, and this is what I'm deciding to do. And I'm bringing all the conscious awareness I have to bear on this. And this is the choice that I'm making. And the voices are saying this, and the voices are saying that. Okay, and then when it changes, write that down so that you have a record all the way through of what your process was.
Yeah, is it realistic at all to think that I might be a positive influence in his life, or
no?
Okay.
I sound pretty firm about that, huh?
Yeah.
Years ago, came across a little book called The Lazy Man's Guide to Enlightenment, which by a fellow named Thaddeus Golas, G-O-L-A-S. And it became one of my favorite books. I've always carried a copy of it somewhere close by. And I just found out recently that in the late 90s sometime, a couple of years before he died, he actually did a revised version of it and wrote his personal story and blah, blah, blah. So it's in the bookstores now if you ever want to go peruse it. And the thing that I recall, now I don't actually know. I haven't read this recent one. I just got it. But this is what I recall. He said, now, I don't think in terms of positive and negative, but this is what he said, and I know what he meant. Okay? Positive energy always believes that it can bring negative energy up. And it never will. Negative energy will always bring positive energy down.
Wow.
Yep. It's heavier. and so it will always bring it down. And that was a sobering little message for me to consider. And of course, I was very young and idealistic when I read it, and I did not want to believe it. I did not, you know, it sounded just cold and cruel and heartless and cynical. Mm-hmm. And then I've watched for a lot of years, and I've concluded that he's right. And I think spiritually, one of the reasons for this is that it is the desire for something to be different from the way it is that we stumble over. In other words, it's a non-acceptance of your on your part of how it is.
Yeah.
You want it to be different, and it's that desire for it to be different that you'll trip over. It's not okay with you if it's this way or that way. You want a certain outcome, and the desire for that outcome makes you unable to be objective.
Wow. Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
It's a lot to consider, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Norma. Wow. Some fascinating stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's such a hard place.
It sounds like a hard place.
Mm-hmm.
Being...
And which we all know. You know,
yes.
I want this thing, and I'm pretty sure that it's not going to go the way I want, and I want it anyway, and...
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's what I projected onto mm-hmm. what she was saying. And
mm-hmm.
that's a very, very
mm-hmm.
difficult place.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting as you're talking about trying to stay in that centered place in an interaction with this other person
mm-hmm.
that's challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard place.
It's very, very difficult. It's hard for us to stay in that centered place on our own.
Right, let alone.
Just in my room by myself. And then bring in another relationship of any kind. Any kind.
Yes.
It's very difficult to stay in a centered place. And then when it's a relationship that pushes our buttons on that kind of level, it's really difficult. And I think the hardest part about that, especially when we're caring about somebody, is trusting in everyone's adequacy. It's we see somebody that
yes.
we care about, and we see their suffering, and we want to help. We want to do something. And it's difficult for us to remember that we are all adequate to our lives and equal to our life experience.
Uh-huh.
It's hard
uh-huh.
to trust that.
Yes.
Because it doesn't look that way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's
right.
what parents go through with their kids.
Yes.
You know, you try to tell a parent that their child is adequate when they are perhaps involved with a drug addict or drinking or whatever it is, not showing up for work or... not doing their schoolwork or whatever it is, to try to get that parent to see, no, this person is adequate to their life experience.
Uh-huh.
It's just, no, I love this child and I need to control this situation.
This child must succeed.
That's right. Yeah.
At all costs.
Yeah. And it's very difficult for us to get that I'm actually more concerned about me than I am about my child.
You're
because
right.
when we love like that, and whatever the relationship, when we love, we are so convinced that it really is for the other person, not for us, that ours is a selfless perspective. And, of course, it never is.
Uh-huh. Yes. Wow. We're going to take a break in just a moment. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Coming up next, we have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian at 6 p.m., followed by the Bod of Euphony at 9 p.m. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name is Michael Gray. And we've come to the end of our show.
My goodness.
And there's been a request for some information about your new book.
Which I am very happy to give, as you
Let's
can imagine.
Let's hear it.
It is called When You're Falling Dive.
When You're Falling Dive.
Acceptance, Freedom, and Possibility.
Great.
Yeah. So making a very, I think, impassioned plea an argument for acceptance as an approach to life and as a way to end suffering.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Go to your nearest bookstore.
Yes.
Check it out or go to sherryhuber.com and look around and you'll be able to find it there.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah. So I guess we will see everybody next week.
Please call us next week, 650-723-9010. Coming up, it's 6 o'clock. We have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian, Bod of Euphony at 9 p.m. Sherry, thanks for joining us. It's good to be back.
It's great to be back, and I'll see you next week. Thank you, Michael.
Sounds great.
Good night.
Good night.